Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are around that Christmas time of year. So I want to start by wishing all of you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And it's that time of year when we're thinking about gratitude and what's important to me and what's important to you, what's important to us. And really, for me, it's around family, friends, and community. And it's around sharing the stories of winning and sharing the stories about entrepreneurship with you. And so today on the show, we have Kenneth Johnston, KJ. He's going to share his story of winning, his story of perseverance, his story of gratitude for his teammates. And I think it's a heartwarming story, and I think it's an uplifting story, and hopefully it's a story that inspires you as we go into the holidays, as we go into this new year, as we go in to really a world of opportunity as we ease out of one part of what COVID was into another. And it reminds us that if we just keep going, we can make it happen. And sometimes it means taking a little bit of risk. So stick around. You're going to love the story of Kenneth KJ Johnston as he builds KJ2 Productions. You know, my mom always told me, if you don't have talent, well, bring some energy, and that's been sort of the story of my life, bringing energy to the show. I've been accused of that several times. Well, today we have a guest who has it all. It has both talent, big-time talent, and energy that will, I think, match mine, maybe exceed mine. Today, I am joined by Kenneth Johnston. He is also known as KJ. How you doing, Kenneth?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining me on the show. We've been talking about this for a while. I want to give us an overview, if you don't mind. You've got this creative background, and you've turned it into this marketing company that uses video. Maybe just give us an overview of what you do.
Yeah. You know, first of all, thank you for calling me Kenneth. I've been trying to change. You know, I go by, most people know me by KJ professionally, ironically, because that's a nickname. But I've been trying to go by Kenneth over the last couple of years, so it's been a tough transition.
So, like, when you were growing up, did your parents call you Kenneth or KJ?
They actually called me Little Kenny. I'm a junior.
Kenny. Okay.
And then I dated this girl named Barbie when I was living in LA, and then my name transitioned to Ken and Barbie, right?
Yes.
And then I went back to film school, and I started going by KJ, and that's what I've known as professionally as KJ.
Yeah, well, in Sacramento, there's another KJ as right. Well. Did they ever get you guys confused? Like, hey.
Tremendously, man. I used to get phone calls. Actually, we used to do a lot of work for the mayor on his Strong Mayor campaign, and the funny notion is that he used to call me lowercase KJ and him uppercase KJ.
That's so funny. Well, if you've ever got an email from him, he does it. This is the only guy I ever met who does every email, every correspondence, all lowercase. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
He's a lowercase typist.
Yes,
he does. Which is bizarre.
I've noticed that. I thought that was typos.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it till right now, but he calls himself the uppercase KJ.
Yeah, he does.
He types it lowercase.
Okay, he considers me lowercase, but.
Yeah, okay, lowercase KJ. So give me this overview, if you don't mind, of your business and you a little bit. I kind of interrupted you.
Yeah, no. KJ2 Productions is a full-service production company here based in Sacramento. Sacramento Proud, Sacramento Strong. We are unique in the sense of we have the ability to pretty much produce content from start to finish.
Okay.
So we are creative, so we can create the concept. We can actually create the script, create the storyboards, and then actually produce it and bring it to fruition. So most of our clients span from anyone like Golden One Credit Union to pizza guys to nonprofits or organizations that are trying to create content and create a message. And we're storytellers, essentially. So I have a staff of people that are far more impressive than I am. I try to hire the best. I've learned a lot in leadership cohorts, one being Nehemiah Emerging Leaders Program, is like, look at people for their talents. And, you know, if it takes me 10 hours to do what you can do in two, why not partner with you, correct?
Right.
So my concept has always been about trying to hire the best. I have an incredible team. It allows me to kind of stay in the lane that I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know this kind of concept of like trying to cross-pollinate and be the jack of all trades. That works in some cases, but for us, I really wanted to focus on having a team of efficient specialists. So we have a cinematographer, we have a DP, we have
an editor. What's a DP?
So a director of photography.
Okay.
So they're the ones specifically that are focused on camera, color and lighting and So that's
what's cinematography? What's the deal?
So a cinematographer is more so just a camera operator.
Okay.
The director of photography is more of the visual director of how a scene looks.
Okay.
So
guy here behind me, Scott, he's got to do both of those things. He's running the cameras and deciding all of that.
And that's
Scott,
super talent.
He is a jack of all trades.
Yeah. Hey, you got to have
cinematographer, DP. He's a few other things too. But
how many checks you get, bro? Yeah, but so when it comes to that, you know, we really wanted to have, I had a mentor of mine, Bishop Lovelace, who told me one time, don't worry about trying to develop people's weaknesses, let them dwell on their strengths. Mm-hmm. So what I learned, even taking some of these leadership cohorts and Strength Finders, have you heard of Strength Finders?
I have. I've heard of Nehemiah too. Is that Scott Syfax?
That's Scott Syfax, yeah. So Strength Finders was one of those things that allows you to understand your top five strengths, right? And I've taken plenty of these personality exams, and I've lied on some of them, just not in a malicious way, but in a way of saying, you know what, do you do A or do you B? Do B. And sometimes B looks like it's more attractive, right? It's okay. Like, that's what I should do. So I'll say I should do B, but yeah. I checked off A, right? And none of them really came back accurate. When I did Strength Finders, I really said, you know, I'm going to hunker down and just answer this as positive as I can. And as truthful as I can. Mm-hmm. And what it came up was my top five strengths. And it comes out with your personality DNA. And once I looked at that, I really kind of appreciated it and said, you know, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the things that I'm good at. And the things that I didn't fall really high on the scale at, I said, why would I do that? Let me find someone who's really good at that.
Makes sense.
And like, then make a partnership.
Like, what did you suck at?
Oh, I sucked at. So I'm a great, good question, bro. I sucked at, I am a great visionary, right? But when it comes to, like, organizing, mm-hmm. like certain things, like analytical things, I'm not good at. If it comes to scribing, you know, putting together Excel spreadsheets, and I don't do that well. So why would I spend 10 hours trying to do that when someone can do it in 30 minutes,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And just because the one thing that we have that we're limited to is our, you could have $1 billion in your pocket and I can have none. The one thing you can't get more than me of is time,
yep.
Right? We all have 24 hours in a day. So people talk about, oh, I'm a great time manager. No one can manage time. Time is going to exist on its own schedule. It's how you manage yourself within the confines of time, right? So I started thinking about that. I said, okay, what's going to allow me to kind of, my top five strengths were communication, positivity. It was woo, winning others over sounds negative, but it just means that you're a good communicator.
Okay.
Right? And then competitiveness. Mm-hmm. So I said, let me try to dwell on my strengths and then find people that can kind of cherry pick off the things that I'm not good at. And what that really kind of resulted in was a good team, because now people are kind of dwelling in the areas that they're really good at. And typically, if they're good at it, they're probably going to enjoy doing
it. Yeah, they're happy.
Right? And they're happy. So that's what I started to think about, was like, let's just build a team of the physical traits that I need, but then also some of those intangibles. And then that created this amazing nucleus of a unit that now sustains itself. And a true business, as you know, Mark, is something that it eventually evolves and it runs itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you still got to put the work into it. So I read this when I was like 17 years old. One of the quotes that he said in there was, hey, if you run your business, if you build a business, it eventually runs itself. And one of the things that resonated with me, he was like, if I'm on vacation with my wife in Europe and someone goes into a Walgreens and picks up a Jet magazine, I'm making money. If I'm sleeping in the middle of the night and someone goes to, you know, Sally's Hair Supplies and buys a bottle of pink hair lotion, I'm making money. So what resonated with me was that he built his business and it started to run itself. So I started to think about, how do you create passive income? How do you create a system that, you know, and it's humbling as well, because I realize that sometimes I'm irrelevant to my own business. And, you know, that's something that as a creative, it's not easy to do. Right.
Because
when people, it was a learning experience for a lot of my clients and myself, because when I started this business, it was just me. Right. So people associated everything with me being there. And in order to grow, I had to realize that, how do I get a system that, whether I'm there or not, it still has the same quality assurance?
Yeah. That makes your company more valuable. You know, I'm an investor. I own a bunch of companies. And the companies that are a one- or two-person company, they don't have the same value typically as one that has human systems that don't have this over-reliance on one person.
Sure.
And that's, those are what we all strive to build, but it isn't easy.
It is not.
So there at the beginning, when you don't have a lot of capital, you've got to somehow tap into those strengths in order to recruit the first couple people.
Sure.
Right? So that was that difficult? How long did it take you to make that switch? Like, I'm not going to do this in myself anymore.
You know, that's an interesting notion. I give you a a case in point, right? My first job I did in this, like first paid job I did in this industry, was in 2008. I did a job that was about 36 hours of labor time, including shooting and writing the script and editing it and getting it to a finished product. 36 hours. You know what I got paid on that job?
Zero.
No, I got a little bit paid.
Okay.
$175.
Oh.
Now you do the math.
Almost zero.
almost zero, essentially.
I was like, oh, they forgot to pay your
salary. And Mark, I had to split that with somebody, right? So what I realized quickly was, A, I was extremely happy. I still have a photocopy of that check. I did cash a check, but I still have a photocopy of the check just to remind myself where it came from, right? But what it taught me at that point was I love what I do, but I need to figure out a way to make it more efficient, right? So I started to think about how do I kind of build something that's sustainable. I didn't want to be I'm theoretically a freelancer. Theoretically. We don't work for any entity. We work for a number of different clients. So we're theoretically freelancers. But I try not to run my business as a freelance business, right? I try to build this kind of essential pipeline that we have, some sort of forecasting to come in. But to answer your question, which is really interesting, is that most businesses, I think, fail when they start thinking too much about bottom line, okay? And bottom line, what I think about it is like, what is that going to, if I bring someone else on, that's going to now clip my profits, right? I started to think about like top line, okay? Instead of thinking it from that perspective, think about what is bringing someone else on going to gain me? So say if I have a job and I'm making $100 an hour, for instance, right? If I do the job myself, I make $100 an hour, but I only have a certain amount of hours in a day to do it, right? And I can't really multitask. Can't break that down and do multiple jobs. But if I bring someone else on, maybe I pay them half of that money, right? But what that now does is it gives me more time to maybe go out and source other income. So now, as opposed to making $100 an hour, I go get another job and we're making $200 an hour. But for the same amount of work, I've now recouped that $50 that I lost. So if you start thinking about it from that perspective and think about it smartly. So going back to when I started thinking about how do I experience some exponential growth, I started to think about how do I bring people on? A, find the right people to do the job. Because that's probably the biggest challenge is finding the right people, right? Because I don't manage a company with thousands of employees where if I laid someone off, there's no personal touch to it. Everyone that works with me is almost, it's a very personal connection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, so I have to very strategically vet that person out and make sure that they understand that they're vested in this company, that they're a partner in this company. I try to manage it that way. I don't manage top down. I manage very linearly, you know? So I think that gives people the experience of feeling like they're part of a unit. And I think that now plants a seed of growth and a seed of sustainability and be very transparent with your people, you know, let them know.
Well, you've built a really cool company. And I just want to make sure maybe from an educational standpoint for somebody that's out there that might be thinking about, doing a commercial or doing, you know, sharing a story on video. Can you walk me through maybe a way of doing that? Because it's I guess there's many ways of doing that, but many times you want to connect with the audience and help draw them in at some place and then move them into action. Walk me through the creative process and how to tell a story that is compelling.
You're right on point. I mean, I think, you know, the funny thing is right now, Mark, everyone with a cell phone is literally our competition. You know, that's how I look at this on this day and age, you know. And so where we have to differentiate ourselves is how do we service our clients to the best capability, right? When someone walks through the door, KJ2 Productions, it's not so much anymore because of COVID. When someone jumps on a Zoom with KJ2 Productions now, what we want them to feel like is that they're being serviced by a team, right? And what we typically will do is try to figure out, hey, what is the story that they're trying to tell? So we're not a templated company. Okay. So you're not going to look on our website and see, hey, this is a package A or package B. We're very boutique in a sense of, you know, if we were to come to Haney Biz, we'd find out, hey, what is the story that you want to tell? So we dive into that. We probe, ask a lot of questions on that. Then we start thinking about who is your audience? Who do you want to tell this story to? Is it the general public? Is it a very unique, specific captive audience? So we kind of dive into those questions. And then we eventually get into this idea of like, what are the specific nodes that you want to hit? And our biggest goal is to create something that's a visceral, effective, efficacious video, at the end of the day.
Okay.
Something that's going to serve, not a check in the box, something that's going to serve a purpose, something that's going to have some shelf life, but something that's going to really compel people to at some point do something, right? Each piece should have some sort of motivation for people to either evoke them to do, either transfer some change or support something or some sort of call to action. So we really kind of curate a story with that. And we use different mediums, whether it's talking heads or is it testimonials or are there visuals in how we tell that story, how we capture the footage. Because anyone could just set a camera down, put it on a tripod and capture imagery. But is how do we, our specialty is in how do we capture that imagery? You know, the camera movements, the camera style, that's the intellectual property.
What's the, what commercial are you most proud of?
Wow. That's a,
maybe describe it to me and then what, why do you love it? What did it evoke?
You know,
emotion?
I think some of the things that we're mostly proud of are usually the things that are in the nonprofit sector.
Hmm.
So reason being, because, you know, we have some amazing commercials. You know, we're running a series of commercials right now with Pizza Guys that runs on the Kings games on Comcast Sports, and it's getting some large recognition. We have some other big budget commercials that are running in the Bay Area right now for some municipal companies. But the ones that really, to me, that hit home are the ones that are really telling a story of some sort of testimonial or some transitions. I think of one 2 years ago that we did for Big Brothers Big Sisters. It was their effort to recruit more bigs, which are Big Brothers or Big Sisters. And we shot a series of actual littles to tell their story, to kind of help create that need. And, you know, it's still, when I watch it, it allows me to have some sort of heartfelt emotional connection to it.
Can get you a little bit choked up.
Yeah, it gets you a little choked up. Yeah, you know, and those are the things. So we are very civically active in the community. I sit on a number of boards, City Year, Sacramento, sat on cottage housing locally here, First Tee of Sacramento. Those are the organizations that's our passion projects. You know, the passion projects are not always the ones that pay the bills, but those are the ones that keep you moving.
Keep you motivated. We all need our reasons why we do. It's not all about the almighty dollar. It's about helping people.
You know, doing the things that you feel will cause some change, right?
Yeah. You think about if you recruited one more big brother or big sister with that advertisement, it's like you probably change somebody's life.
Yeah, absolutely. It's systemic change.
Yeah.
Systemic change. So, yeah. But those are the things that I'm most proud of. I'm truly blessed. I tell you, Mark, to have such an amazing team, people that I work with every day.
Is there somebody on your team that is like, without that person, I would be nowhere?
Kevin Mulligan.
Who's Kevin?
So Kevin is literally like my right-hand man. He literally runs the day-to-day of the business, but without him, I literally don't know how I would operate. You know, he's the one that's, you know, the direct connection to our team, so he pretty much keeps most of the team going. He organizes most. He's basically our production manager.
Mm-hmm.
So without him, literally, he's, you know, we'd be nowhere. You know, but it's hard to assess. I mean, everyone on our crew, I look at it like this. If you look at a puzzle, you take one piece out of the puzzle. It's an incomplete puzzle, right? But if you look at each shape of the puzzle, everyone has different shapes, different sizes, right? Doesn't mean that your job is more important than my job or his job is more important than her job. Everyone's job has this unique shape and form because they're good at certain things. But without that one piece, it's an empty puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how I look at how I manage how we operate, because theoretically, we all have different strengths.
Yeah.
But you take one of those away, and we're stuck.
Yeah, no question. Now, one of the things you said is that you are, and I would agree with this, I described you as a guy that has energy as well as talent. You you framed it a little bit at the beginning of like, I'm a left brain guy and a right brain guy. I have creativity, but I know how to run a business. I can drive results.
Sure.
How did you discover that? Was that through the StrengthsFinders piece, or was that just from playing the game?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I think I always knew that I had this creative passion, right? So let me tell you where this comes from. I grew up in New Orleans, right? So what I saw was a bunch of creatives, okay? But they were all like street artists. So you would see these amazing creative folks, but they were living on the street painting or playing music or dancing, singing, and they had a little bucket by them asking for money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Impressive artist. So growing up as an African American in a kind of during a time where, like, my grandmother didn't have a higher education, but I used to say she had a PhD in grandma. Like, she knew how to grandma, right? She was an incredible grandmother. So coming from a standpoint of where I felt like the pressure of getting a job down the normal route was the way I needed to go, right? Looking at a creative job didn't seem like a viable way of making an income.
Okay.
So I kind of...
You weren't encouraged to take the creative route.
No, no. I literally suppressed it myself, bro. Okay. I suppressed it myself because I was like, yeah, I can go try to be this creative person, but I'm going to be on the street begging for quarters. Yeah. And I didn't look at that as a viable way of making an income. So I kind of suppressed that and I just kind of did the route of business. Went and got my degree, had a great job working in... I was working in pharmaceutical sales and surgical sales for about 5 years. Made great money, you know. Six-figure job. And then I literally had this epiphany coming back from a trip. I typed up my letter of resignation and didn't have a plan yet. I had applied to go to film school, but hadn't gotten accepted, right? But I knew that I wanted to do something different. But I was in a cush position because I had a little money saved, whatnot. So I said, okay, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to try to go to film school.
What did grandma say?
Grandma was like, grandma can say no wrong. Grandma's an interesting thing about grandmothers. Grandmother... relationships are different than parent relationships,
yeah, true,
right?
Yeah.
Grandmothers, you can't do, you are always in good light with your grandma.
Yeah,
so grandma was like, baby, you go do what you want to do, and grandma's always going to love you. And I knew I would never go hungry.
Yeah.
I might not be able to have afford the things that I wanted in life, but I knew I was going to struggle for a couple of years,
so
right?
So you take the risk and you go film school, and I mean, everything's sailing along, just like probably mom wanted, and now it's probably, okay, a new risk.
I had this huge risk, and I said, okay, I'm going to see where this takes me. So, of course, I'm hit with a lot of different challenges during that time. And one of the biggest things, there's an interesting thing, and you've talked to thousands of people. I guarantee you everyone that's had some tangent of success can tell you some pivotal moments in their life that, I mean, down to the T, where they have said, okay, this is a fork in the road, right? I either go left or right. And I've had many of those, but the first one that I really experienced was when I was in school. I was still living in LA, right? And now I'm in school with some kids that are like 20 years old, right? I'm 30 years old at the time.
Okay, this is the film school.
Yeah.
You left corporate
America, and, sustainable life.
Yeah, okay.
Okay?
Yep.
Now, I had a business that I started in Louisiana with a couple of guys. And it was kind of my plan to have some income coming in. We had started a casting agency in Louisiana. It's called Louisiana Actors and Talent, right? So this was like because in Louisiana at the time, New Orleans, a lot of film was going on, right? A lot of big budget film.
Okay.
So I started a business with these two guys, one that had already had a footprint in the film community, casting basically just extras for film. Business was doing well. It was giving me some income while I was back in school. And when Katrina hit, Katrina shut everything down in Louisiana, right?
Yep.
2005. So it shut the business down. Now, the guy that I was in business with, one of the guys I was in business with, just wasn't super savvy with money. To make the long story short, guy wound up embezzling over $100,000 from me, from the business, which was directly tied to me. So my little safety net while I was in school now was gone. I didn't even know this happened until I figured out that my house note, I was living in L.A., owned a home, my house note that I had a 30-day late notice, right? So I'm hit with this without even knowing. Right. So all of a sudden my safety net is zero, negative zero. Right. So I'm faced with this whole challenge in school still, second year school. And I'm looking at this process of what am I going to do? Right. I have no money. Now I have to resort back to parents I have to figure this out. Right. So I'm driving. This is one night. I'm driving from class to home. And as I'm driving, I'm looking at my dial on my car. It's on, like, yellow lights on. Now I'm sitting here, Mark, driving an Escalade, Cadillac Escalade on 24s, right? And I have no money in the bank. So
almost no gas.
And zero gas, right? That's called hood rich where I'm from, okay? So I pull up to the guy. This is vividly, I remember this. I pull up to the gas station. It's an AM PM, right? And this is when gas was about five, like it is now, $5 a gallon, right? I pull into this gas station. I have a checking account that is overdrawn by $2,000, right? So I can't use my credit card, our debit card. I have four single dollar bills in my pocket, $4. I open up my ashtray, 68 cents in my ashtray, right? So I have $4.68. Gas is like close to $5 a gallon. And my gas tank is on E. And I still have about 12 miles to get home. So I pull in the gas station and I'm hungry. I go in and I have to make a decision. So I grab a Big Gulp, which is 99 cents. I grab a hot dog, which is 99 cents. And I pull that money out of my pocket. And with no trepidation, I put it on the counter. And I tell the guy, put the rest on four. Wow. And he looks at me and he looks out at the car. And the look of disdain that this guy had for me, you know, to think like you're putting $2.20 on a 26 gallon tank. This is going to get you nothing. And I knew that. But the look of disdain that he gave me was at that bottom point of my life. I was like, there is no way that I can continue to live my life this way. Right. So when I go back and, you know, I walk out with pride, I go back, I go to the gas tank, you know, flip the thing, hit the thing, click it. No less than like 10 seconds later, it clicks off. And I'm thinking I get in the car. The needle doesn't move, Mark. Literally doesn't move. Still on yellow. And I'm thinking, how am I hope I have enough gas just to get home. So, but that was just like a pivotal point in my life when I said, I can't continue down this path. You know, I have to figure this thing out. And 2 days later, I had decided that I was going to start my own company. Literally 2 days later, I had applied for KG2 Productions with the state of California, started my LLC, and started my company. I said, I'm at the bottom now. There's no way that I can go any lower. So let me just start.
Just go do a job, get $175 or whatever it is.
$175, my first check, you know? Wow. So. Oh,
wow. Well, fast forward to today, obviously you're doing very well, but when COVID hit, it affected all of us. Yeah. You know, here I've got a bunch of businesses and it affected every one of us in a different way. But I have to imagine a business like yours got shut down for some period of time.
Yeah, COVID, man.
Was that a flashback of moment of perseverance?
COVID was it literally was a doozer for everyone, right? I mean, it's one of these things that's unique. It's like no one's individual story really surmounted to anything because everybody was going through at the same time. It's not like this isolated company.
Yeah, here's what happened to me. Hey, right. Wait, it's happened to all of us, dude. Shut the heck up.
It's happened to everybody.
Yeah.
So... But I remember specifically waking up, like, you know, we were on this tangent in 2020 of forecasting of having a pretty good year. You know, we were signing some amazing clients. We were having some of our own things that we were doing personally that was surmounting to look like a great forecast for the year, right? And then I remember vividly being at the game. I'm from New Orleans. I was at the NBA game when they were playing the Pelicans.
Oh, okay, when the Kings were playing the Pelicans?
Kings were playing the Pelicans. Okay. And that was the day that the NBA shut down. Do you remember that?
In the middle of the game, huh?
Or it didn't even start yet.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It didn't even start yet,
right? So I remember being at that game, and then when that happened, I was like, oh, my gosh. If the NBA is shutting this down, then that's like the forecast for it, demise, right?
Yeah.
And I literally remember over the next week, we kept getting calls of cancellations or postponements of things that we had booked, right? Yeah. And in our world, it's like based on, you know, things that we have put on our calendar, right? And it was just call after call. I was almost afraid to answer my phone because every time I see a client calling, I'm like, do they have a project on the books? It's probably going to be a cancellation. Not all cancellations, a lot of postponements, but for all practical purposes, they were all being canceled with no foreseeable, like, idea of when we're going to pick this back up. So immediately I started panicking as more so from, now this is where my business side kicks in. The creative side is like aloof, but my business side starts to think about, you know, what's going to happen here. And then within probably 3 weeks, 95% of our contracts that we had on the books was gone. Zilch. Out the door.
Wow.
So as a business owner, and thinking first and foremost about my team, survival, I started thinking, what the heck are we going to do? So I literally started, first I started looking at our slush fund, right? Burn through our slush fund. I always learned.
You kept paying the employees during the.
Yeah.
Because your revenue shuts off.
Revenue shuts off.
So then you start tapping into whatever happens to be in your bank.
Whatever account. Some resources, yeah. You know, and Because the first thing that I wanted to do, now here's the one positive notion I would say. I didn't have to lay anyone off during COVID, right? I didn't want to lay anyone off. I didn't pay myself, but I didn't want to lay anyone off because I knew, A, that our team, they enjoy what they do. Like, it's a creative world. They love what they do. Like, you know, literally, I'm very fortunate to have a be a part of an organization that people like doing what they do. It's not like, you know, being a roofer on a 100-degree day and it's like, how do I get this day off? You know, they theoretically enjoy doing what they do. So for one, I didn't want to have to lay people off because I knew if I lost them, it'd be tough for me to get them back, right? So that was one thing. I said, let me see how I can sustain this. The second thing was, it's for their own mental capacity, you know, of not having work to do would have been detrimental. Mm, yeah. So I thought about that. So I said, let's just start engaging in some of our own personal kind of, first we started thinking about what can we do around just getting things in order. So that's what the excuse we use first. Let's just get our office in order, you know, just something, do some housekeeping type stuff. But that ran out. And then we got to figure out, like, what else can we do? So we kind of started thinking about that. I was listening to this psychologist out of New York that was talking about this concept of people freaking out. She said, you know what? It's okay to freak out, like, but put a timer on it. So I was waking up every morning at like 4 a.m. with anxiety of like, how am I gonna do this? Because the funds were starting to run through. And she talked about, yeah, you could freak out, but put a timer on it. So what I would do is I'd wake up in the morning, I'd set my clock for 15 minutes, and I literally would just freak out in my own capacity, right?
What do you mean freak out?
Like, I mean, I would just like stress yell? And yeah, I would, yeah. I would, I remember things like, you know, running up down my stairs in my house, you know, hitting up, you know, exerting energy. I was hitting a punching bag, just things like that. And then as soon as that 15 minutes went off, I said, okay, now it's time to get focused.
Okay.
So I started thinking about things. So what we did was we started engaging. I have an employee of mine, Cody Martin, who I called up and I said, look, I have this idea that I want to go out and capture stories of other small businesses in the region. Okay. And we came up with this concept, and I had talked to you about it. It's called Business as Unusual.
Yeah.
So what it was I wanted to say, let's go out and just literally see what other businesses are doing, business owners, micro business owners are doing out there to survive. You know, because there was some really resilience going on in the region, right?
Yes.
So Cody, and I thank this guy to this day, he said, KJ, I will do it. You don't have to worry about paying me. You know, I'll do it. You know, we'll just go and do it ourselves. I couldn't engage the rest of my staff because our production costs are not. It's expensive. So it's just me and him. I went back to grassroots. I didn't touch a camera personally myself in probably 4 years, like literally operated a camera, right? But I had to go back and learn grassroots. So we went out and hit the turf, and I just started calling upon friends, people that I knew, business owners that I knew, and just really wanted to capture their stories. So we created this concept called Business as Unusual, and we would go and, I mean, we interviewed, you know, over 30 people during that time, just listening to how they persevered, you know, and it wasn't meant to capture this notion of dire or, you know, failure. It was supposed to capture this notion of inspiration and resilience. So we did that. But that wasn't paying the bills. I mean, no one was paying us to do that. That was just costing us real world time and money, right? One of the things that I remember this literally on the day, April 15th, original tax day, I woke up and I said, we have to do something. So I remember going to online and looking up. There's this company called B&H that we buy most of our camera equipment. I'm sure you.
Yeah, I know those guys.
So I go on there and I said, you know, let's look at some streaming equipment, right? So I go and I look up a bunch of stuff on streaming, what type of. Now, this is stuff that is in our wheelhouse, but wasn't our bread and butter, right? We never did like live broadcast. We did a lot of stuff that's for post-production. So I went in and I say, let's just purchase some of this equipment. I think that might be something that we can do. Now, when I say we didn't have a job lined up for it, not one job, right? It was on faith. I literally, so we invested equipment and I put all of this money on my American Express, right? And I'm not talking about my Delta American Express that you could pay over, you know, 6 months, a year. I put it on my charge card, which is due in 30 days, right? So as soon as I made the purchase, now my anxiety is now building up again, right? Because I'm like, how in the heck am I going to pay this off in 30 days? I literally called American Express and I asked them, how can we, you know, do I have any latitude with this? I was like, sure, we can give you 30 days to do it. And I was like, well, I'll take that and we'll see what it does after, right? So that's April 15th. On April 17th, Mark, I get a phone call, right, from a client. Can't disclose a client, but get a phone call from a client. And they're asking me about the ability to be able to do this live for them, right, where they want to have multiple people in one room. They didn't want to do it like Zoom, but multiple people in one room, and they wanted to produce this as a live event. And I was like, ironically, we just purchased some equipment to do this, right? We haven't even received the equipment yet. This is 2 days later. So I'm like, absolutely, we can do this. And they said, I said, when is your event? The event was in May, first week in May. So the equipment was on schedule to get there at the end of April. So I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, literally, I'm figuring that how did this, you know, literally truly blessed in this fashion. So I get off the phone with the client. I pick up the phone with B&H again to see if I can kind of supplement some other equipment with it. By that time, 2 days later, all of that equipment was sold out. It was on back order for 30-day back order. So if I would have waited for the call to come in to get that job, right, not only would I not have been able to do the job because the equipment wasn't there, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to even buy the equipment, right? So it was this notion of I was very, like the fortitude for me to think about putting something on risk to do it, right? Now here's the caveat of the story. This is a client that we had worked for before and we had done some pro bono work for before. The client had told me, they said, well, let me ask you a question. You have all the equipment that you need to do this? And I said, yeah, we just ordered it. I said, did you have to pay for that? I said, yeah. She said, I don't know if you remember, you did a project for us about 2 years ago. I said, yeah, we've done a number of projects for it. And she said, a couple of days before the project, we lost the funding for the project. And I was like, that makes it a little more familiar. And she said, you know what you did? You actually did the job. Even we lost the funding, you guys did the job at pro bono, but you did it like you got full rate for the job. You didn't dumb down the work. She said, we really appreciated that. What we do have is we have a grant for this project that we want you to do. She said, the cost of the money for the equipment, you could take the cost of that equipment, amortize it over a couple of the jobs, and we'll pay for that equipment for you. And Mark, when I tell you, I literally, unprofessionally, was on my kitchen floor crying on the floor because I didn't know where that money was going to come from. I literally did not know. I didn't know. Didn't have a job lined up, but not only did we get a job, we got a job and they paid for the equipment. And ironically, that equipment was, and that skill set that we learned over COVID was one of the things that kind of carried us through. Because now you said we have the ability to really kind of produce these live shows. We could stream them to multi-platforms, simulcast. So it gave us the ability to really go out and produce this content. And I didn't have to, again, didn't have to lay anyone off during this time. You know, we just kind of survived. Wow. So it was just one of these things where...
doing the right thing years before.
You never know.
What goes around comes around.
You never know.
Yeah.
One of my mentors told me years ago, he said, KJ, don't ever worry about the money on a job. Don't ever do a job for the money. He said, if you do good work, the money will somehow find you at some point. And I don't ever look at it from a perspective of about money. We never do jobs that's related to budgets. We do jobs that related to the passion and to the passion primarily of the client. Like we love working with people that are passionate about what they do, you know. So it just resonates with the content. If you look at our website and look at the people that we work with, I mean, it's a plethora of different folks. But that's just because usually people, and what I always appreciate about small business, because their stories are always very unique. You know, how people started their businesses is always sometimes it's pretty standard, but a lot of times it's by some tragedy or them getting fired from a job. And it's like, yeah, let me just do something different. It's just unique. And I love hearing those stories, you know? So that's really been the caveat of us is we look at things from how do we use our talent, our skills to help people convey their messaging. Right.
Okay, so one final question. We're kind of running against the clock a little bit. I know that you have done some mentoring with people that want to build businesses,
sure,
with small business and so on. And just as you think about our audience, a lot of early stage companies, startups, small business, any words of wisdom? What kinds of things do you make sure that you share with people that are these early stage entrepreneurs?
I think that's in this day and age, I think how the transition of there's so many creative people out there. When I say creative in any kind of fashion, whether it's, you know, programming or coding or photography or music or whatever it is, I always say, no matter what business that you're in, whether you're a doctor or an attorney, it's good to have some sort of business acumen, right? You have to promote yourself or promote what you do. So you have to be able to market your core skill set, right? When I look at kids or youth these days, I'm amazed when you just look at TikTok or any of these social media platforms, the creativity that's out there,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So I started teaching this course about 3 years ago called How to Monetize Your Creative Passion. And the reasoning behind that is I think when people see people do certain things that's creative, they tend to look at what they do as great, but they marginalize what it takes to get that done, right?
Okay.
Meaning that if you see someone that's a good photographer, you think, okay, well, and that photographer says, hey, this is what it costs for me to come out and shoot photography for an hour. Think about what is it worth to you to do that, right? And then steadfast on what you charge, because if people will try to marginalize creative folks, they'll say, okay, well, I can shoot photography as well. I don't want to pay $100 an hour. I'd rather pay $10 an hour or $20 an hour. So what I try to do is try to teach people on from an entrepreneurial standpoint, just because you're creative doesn't mean that you have to be a starving artist. You know,
okay.
Figure out a way how to monetize that and create a sustainable business. You know, how do you make passive income doing what you do, whether it's selling your photography or, because if you're, you know, I look at it from a perspective of, if you're a great artist, you got to be painting something to make money, right? How do you figure out how to take that and make some residual income off of that? So looking at it from a perspective of just understanding normal or basic business practices and how to market yourself, how to sell what you do, how to value what you do.
How do you value what you do?
That's the biggest challenge. I think you got to figure that out on your own.
I mean, the market, if somebody said, hey, it's my first customer, I can only give you $175. Okay, you take it. But as you get better at it and proven, you can't keep charging $175 anymore.
You have to figure out, and that takes some real casework. What does it cost? What is your time worth per hour? What does it take to get things done? Whether there's some cost of goods sold. You know, I don't want to get too deep into accounting terms, but you know, at what point do you feel because the market's going to dictate itself at some point, right? You know, you can shift it as much as you can. So if you're saying, and then also understand what is your market, do research on what other people are doing.
You know, we had a business, I've got a number of businesses now. I think you probably know, I think I'm investing in like 65 companies, but one of our businesses that blew up big, we took the top line approach that you mentioned earlier. And we had a motto. It was all about repeat customers. And the motto was, it was an internal motto, suck them in and inch them up. So we would go out there and suck them in with, we would sell to people at whatever it took to whatever they wanted to pay for the product.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we sold it to them for. And over time we killed them with customer service.
Absolutely.
And all these other things that go into, you know, best possible customer experience. And over time the margins sort of took care of themselves.
Sure.
And they inched up, if you will. So suck them in and inch them up. And it's not the craziest idea in the world is to get enough critical mass, build enough experience, especially if you're a newer player in the game, and then develop a reputation, develop a following, if you will, then the margins tend to take care of themselves.
Exactly. Two things I would say, and that's exactly how you kind of have to approach it. One is like, okay, what is the value of your service, right, or product? And what is the cost of, you look at the whole scale of it, like if you have some high-end clients, some high-exposed clients, you know, maybe getting your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you could say, hey, I'm going to do this job for X amount of dollars, but what I want to do is build your trust, right? So once you get them in, like you said, inch them in, suck them in, inch them out. I love that notion.
We never advertised that motto, but you know.
But it's a fair term. The way I look at it, Mark, I look at it like a triangle, right? A triangle has three points. You have one point is the quality of your product. The other point is the cost of your product. And the other point is the experience of your product, right? So you can't be all three. You can't be the cheapest, give the best product, and provide the best experience. You have to pick two. And what we try to look at is like, we're not the cheapest in town. There's tons of people that could do some of the stuff that we do at a half of what we do it for, right? But where you find your mix, your good mix is like, we're going to always try to provide the best product and try to provide the best experience, right? The value then comes in the fact that if a client came to you and said, hey, Mark, what is it going to take to cut my lawn? And you say, it's going to cost you $100, right? And you're like, I can find someone to do it for half of that. But you hire the person that does it for half and they give you a crappy job. They don't show up on time. It's all of the headache that comes with it. Now the value, whatever you saved, is no longer a value, right? Because you've invested too much time into catching up with the money, right? If you provide the best experience and the best product, that value comes in that. Now customers are going to start, I say customers, I like to refer to them as clients because they've become, you know, they're no longer just a customer, they're clients because now they come back and then they refer you to other people. Yeah. And that's where you start to see that residual effect of what you do has really changed someone's experience and how they approached you as a business, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's, you just have to find what's your margin, know what it's going to cost you to do the job, and then figure out what are you willing to price yourself out to figure out how do you become profitable. Yeah.
Well, we're about out of time. Kenneth, KJ, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for what you do for the entrepreneurial community, for the creative community. I know when you help people to share their story, whether it be Big Brothers and Big Sisters, Golden One, or Pizza Guys, you're driving the economy. That's what makes the world go round. So thank you for what you do. Glad you are living here, right here in Sacramento, and we're working alongside each other to help build this hometown that we love.
Absolutely, Mark. Thank you so much.
You betcha. Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show, and as we go into these holiday season, again, just a motion to you, a mention to you, a gesture to you of gratitude. Thank you for helping me out this last year. For all of us, it's been challenging as we've been building businesses, but to my teammates, Scott, Tammy, Rick, Monique, my son Marcus, we're building out the Growth Factory. Excited about what we're doing to our portfolio companies, the 15 rock star entrepreneurs that we just invested into, to you, to the mentors, to the investors, and to the civic partners that have rallied around these promising startups, and to all my existing portfolio companies. Merry Christmas. Wish you the best. And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, for all you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, for our security and our way of life. Merry Christmas, and we're never above you, never below you, and we're always by your side.
So calm and
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.